3, 2, 1. Here we go. We're recording. Okay. So, and again, I apologize for canceling on the last meeting. I was not able to make it. I had a family issue come up. I wanted tonight's learning to be a refuah shlema for someone who's in a dire situation. Shalamis Miriam Bastibel. Should I have a refuah shlema? Perek Ches of Shavias. So Perek Ches is going to talk about misusing Shavias. And it's really a question of how do you make sure that you use it for the right purposes for your own body, not for some animal's body, or you know somehow demean it by taking the kedusha that is on it and using it inappropriately. And also a little bit about how we consider it in terms of payment, what we consider in terms of, it should be free to everyone, just like shvius fruits of all kinds. So these are the kinds of things that you would use for your body. They're not necessarily food, but can be used for your own body. And then how do we pay for them? So shvius, Mishnah Aleph, Klal Gadol Amru b'shvius. There was a significant rule that we stated concerning the seventh year produce, kol hamiyuchad lemachal adam, whatever is reserved for human consumption, ein osin mimenu melugma laadam, cannot be made into a plaster or some kind of treatment of a wound for a person. The ein sarich lamar livhema, and surely not so for an animal, because if this is shvius produce, we want to see that it's used directly towards a person. It has a certain level of kedusha, and we don't want to turn it into a secondary use as like a medicinal treatment for a person, and certainly not for an animal. And anything that is not for specifically for the purposes of food for people, osin mimenu melugma laadam, then that could be used as some kind of plaster for a person. Aval lo livhema, but not for a plaster for an animal, not to fix a wound, for example, of an animal. B'chol she'enu miyuchad lo l'machal adam v'lo l'machal behema, and if it's neither reserved for human consumption nor for animal consumption, chashav adam v'l'machal behema. If he intended it for human consumption and animal consumption, then notnim alav chumrei adam v'chumrei behema. Then we apply both stringencies to the food of people and the food of animals to it. Chashav alav la'etzim. And if he intended its use just to burn it as wood for fuel, harei hu, then it is ke'etzim, as if it's treated as if it's just plain wood. Kagon, for example, hasia, if it's used as like a savory, azov, or if it's hyssop, and these are fragrant uses, v'hakoranit, and at least here in art school, they translate hakoranit as oregano. So these are intended uses where we say it's the firewood is not subject to the laws of Shemitah, because that use is not really for the benefit of a person. And similarly, for these other ideas, the savory art scroll says, the Mishnah lists examples of species which are reserved neither for human or animal food. And translation follows that one of the renderings of by the Shulchan Aruch, that is a type of hyssop that has some kind of fragrance to it when it's burned. So that is Mishnah Aleph. Okay, so Mishnah Beis, Shavis Mitna Lachila. So seventh year produce that was given for eating, for the purposes of eating, Lishtia, or for drinking, Lisicha, and any kind of anointment as like an oil or a salve, Lechol Davar Shadarko Lechol. To eat that which is customary to eat, Lasuch davar shadarko lasuch, and to anoint with that which it is normal to anoint. So if it's done in the normal manner, lo yasuch yain v'chometz, one may not sorry, lo yasuch yain yichometz. One may not anoint with wine or vinegar of shvius. So if the grapes came from shvius produce, right, would not allow you to rub it on your body. Aval sach hu et hashemen. But you may anoint with oil. So I believe here, I have to read into the commentary, but I believe just from memory that the difference would be, you don't traditionally rub wine or vinegar into people's skin as a regular treatment of something, but we do that for olive oil as a moisturizer. So the shemen, the oil from olives, would be permissible as a shvius application. V'chein bitruma. And the same goes, that same preventative measure on the grapes for wine and vinegar and for oils permissibility on oil. Those go for things that have the same kedushas of truma and for meiser sheni. Kal mehem shvius shenitna lahadlakat haner. And greater leniency is applied to seventh year produce than to them, in that it may be used for kindling for a lamp. So those oils could be burned, and that's not, I think, traditionally seen as an application on the body that someone could derive benefit from, but we do allow them to burn that as oil to light the lamp. In just the commentary to clarify, I want to make sure I have this right, it says over here, where it says kal mehem shvius shenitna lahadlakat haner, the greater leniency is applied to the seventh year produce than to them in that it may be used for kindling a lamp. They say, in contrast to oil of truma and meiser sheni, oil of shemitah produce may be used as fuel for lighting the lamp. That's according to the Rav. Because there's a verse in Vayikra that says, and the uncultivated produce of the land shall be for you to eat. And the phrase for you is understood by the Gemara in Sukkah to imply that it may be used for any purpose which brings benefit to a person for you, right? That's the for you part. Whereas the term to eat implies the use is restricted only to eating specifically. So the contradictory inferences indicate that the borderline between the permitted and the prohibited is somewhere between the two extremes, so that all uses resembling eating would be permitted. So this, as taught by the Gemara, means that the benefit derived from the use of the substance coincides with its elimination or its use. And this criterion is met when oil is burned for light. So it somehow is a benefit to the body. It's not that we eat it per se, but that we take in its the light and the result of its burning, of its consumption. That would be the best word, the consumption of the oil. Okay, so you want to go on? You okay to go on to Gimel?
Yeah.
Okay. To Gimel, Shvius, Perches, Mishnah Gimel, Ein Mochin Peiro. Shvit, lo bemida. Now, one may not sell seventh year produce either by measure, which is one method of sale, velo bemishkal, and not by weight, which would be a second method of sale, velo beminyan, and not by number. So what's somewhat confusing here is we may not be familiar with these days, but there were accepted ways that certain fruits and vegetables and produce were sold, just like we would say today, a bunch of carrots. You know, we don't sell by 7 carrots. You know, we don't say, hey, I'm going to sell you 7 carrots. I'll sell you a bunch of carrots. And that's sometimes by weight, even. I'll sell you 2 pounds of carrots, right? So these are different ways of selling. Velo to einim b'minyan. And now they get specific and they say, and not figs by number, because traditionally figs were sold by weight or by volume, let's say. But that would be the traditional way. So lo te'enim b'minyan, we don't sell figs by, I'll give you 500 figs. You know, you don't measure them by number. V'lo yarak b'mishkal, and not vegetables by weight, because the greens We don't say, okay, I'll sell you 2 pounds of lettuce. You know, you say, I'll sell you 10 heads of lettuce, right? So it's how that is traditionally sold. And then the alternative is to do it sort of with a shinoi to say, I'll sell you in another sales method, if that's the best word. Beis Shammai Omrim. So Beis Shammai say to this, af lo agudot, not even in bunches, say Beis Shammai. Uveit Hillel Omrim, but Beit Hillel then come back and say, et shadarko le'egod, that which is customarily tied or tied up in bunches, b'bayit, for the house, ogdim oto bashuk, then they may be tied up for the market. So if two housekeepers are trading in terms of, hey, you know, can I have a dozen eggs? I'll give you a carton of eggs, and that's traditionally a dozen. That's the way people normally transact. That would be acceptable according to Beis Hillel. Kagon, and here they give the example actually, kagon hakration. So for leek, right? The giant onion stalks. Kagon hakration. The nates hechalav, and the milky blossom. So I forgot which, what this is. Milky blossom, I thought I was listening to I'm looking at Art Scroll right now, and I think what I was listening to in preparation to this and reading the other day was Kahati. I believe if you have Kahati, maybe he has an actual species here, but the milky blossom, I'm not sure what that is. But you know, there are different species that are bundled, and whether it be for commercial or domestic use, one way or the other, they are transacted or sold in the same measurements. So this Mishnah is going through this particular Mishnah is going through how things are bought and sold traditionally, as opposed to maybe doing it with a shinoi in Shemitah in order to transact them, because they should be treated with a higher level of kedusha in those because of their nature, their holy nature.
Basically, only allows bundles. He doesn't allow dozen eggs, because that would be by count.
True. I was thinking actually.
I don't think it would be. Yeah, it was a fair exchange. That would be. I guess you can only change something the bundle for bundle.
Right, and I'm not sure how they would regard really a carton, but I was thinking of a carton. You know, that would be the accepted method. That traditionally you say, like, you know, like a baker's dozen or a dozen whatever eggs. You know, 5 dozen eggs. You go to like Costco and you get these like massive containers of all these.
Yeah, but that's eggs. That's numbered. That's all. That's so what it is, by there, is it by weight or by number?
I was thinking they were grouped because they're in dozens. You know, it's not like I'm selling you 36 eggs. I'm selling you 3 dozen eggs.
Numbers. It's numbers.
Yeah. Okay.
This is more talking about like green stuff, like green leaves.
Yeah, like heads of lettuce and, you know, how many stalk of celery and things like that. Yeah. Okay, so Mishnah Dalet. Ha'omer lepoil, if a guy says to his worker, hey lach isar ze, v'laket li yarak hayom, here's an isar for you. Pick me vegetables today. Sahara mutar. Then his earnings are permissible. So this is, how do you deal with Shemitah produce in terms of payments? Because again, we're not supposed to be buying and selling it. So you can't use Shemitah produce to pay workers either. It should not be in the form of a payment. So the wording is going to be very, very key on isolating what his intent is, right? His what's the word in attorney circles, right? The thought of the person when he goes to kill someone. Did he intend to kill someone, right? Mens rea, I think it's called, right? The mens rea. What's the mens rea? Ha'omer lepoil heilach isar ze v'laket li yarak hayom.
Are you implying that the worker cannot take it as a hefker?
He can't take it as a payment, right? He's handing him money. Here's an isar.
I'm saying, are we implying that he cannot just come and take it on his own anytime he wants? That, are we implying that it's not hefker for him to take? Like, why would he gather vegetables for the owner if he can just take it and go?
He's being sent as like a shliach. And what we're afraid of is he's going to come out with this as payment, with the shvius as payment.
I understand. So I'm saying, but what's the benefit for him to gather vegetables for the owner if he can just come and take it as a hefker and go home?
Because he's it's like he's accepting payment, I believe. I believe that's the point.
I'm saying that it implies that he can probably cannot take it as a hefker.
I think he would be able to take it as a hefker, but the fact that he accepted money, it's almost as if he's taking payment. So we want to avoid that.
What money? Isar?
Yeah, the Isar. The Isar coin.
What's the Isar?
The Isar is a small amount of money coin. It's like
a coin. Okay. So okay.
So he's taken money, and what we want to prevent.
So what is it? It's like a favor?
Not a favor. He wouldn't want him to accept it as payment. So
no, but I'm saying what we were trying to make it into favor rather than payment. Like
what he's doing is he's being paid. I think later, let me just check. I think he's being paid to do a job. He's being paid to do a job. He's not being paid as a remuneration or on the shvius. He's being paid as a task, not on the shvius, as an exchange. I think that's what it comes down to. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. See, wait till the end, but I'm going to jump to try to answer your question, because at look at the last phrase in this Mishnah, lakat mimenu stam. But if he took for him as usual, lo yishalem lo midme shvit, he may not pay him with seventh year money. That's what we're afraid this is turning out to be in the first case, right? She'ein porin chov midme shvit, because one may not repay a debt with seventh year money. So that's where we're going with this. Yeah. Any clearer? I hope I'm clear.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So let's go back. So Haomer Lepoil, he says to his worker, hey lach iser ze, take this iser coin, velakate li yarak hayom, and go pick vegetables for me today. And what's the din? Scharo mutar. Then his earnings are permissible. He's allowed to keep it. Lakate li bo yarak hayom, but if he says to me, pick vegetables for me today in return for this iser, scharo asur, then his earnings will be prohibited. Okay, so and then at the end we explain it like this. Let's just get through this next phrase. Lakach min hanachtom, and if he took a loaf worth so I jumped ahead in English, but lakach min hanachtom, and if he took from the baker kikar bepundion, a loaf that was worth a pundion coin, and I forgot which is more. I think a pundion is actually worth more than an iser. I think an iser is a small amount, and a pundion is a large amount. I have to go find that. Kishe alakot, yarakot, sada avilach. When I pick field vegetables, I will bring you some. Mutar, it would be permissible. Lakach mimenu stam, but if you said to him simply, lo yishalim lo, lakach mimenu stam, lo yishalim lo miyadei shvit, but if he took from him as usual, as if it were a payment, he may not pay him with seventh year money. She'ein porin chov midmei shvit. The point of this whole Mishnah is one may not repay a debt with seventh year money. So we're afraid of the exchange at the beginning being the payment rather than a task of, hey, you know, whatever the guy's name is, the subordinate, the employee, go pick for me something rather than go take shvitz, you know, and then you can keep the rest of it. So we want to make sure this is not a transaction, that this is more of like an assignment, you know, a task that is given, and then you're paid on the basis of that, but you're not taking shvitz as the payment itself, that this iser coin or this pundion for the baker would not represent a transaction. I think that's where it comes down, to the best of my studies on Shabbos, about a day later, you know. I hope that's clear. Does that make any more sense from the outside?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, Mishnah Hey. Ein notnin lo levayar. Okay, so And this is easier also in the art scroll because they have a much clearer definition of who this is. In the Kahati, they simply say the Leviar is a pit digger. Here in art scroll, they have well digger. So important distinction. Ein notnin lo Leviar. One may not give seventh year assets as payment to a well digger, velo levalan, and not to a bathhouse, velo lesapar, and not to a barber, velo lesapan, and not to a boatman, a sailor. Now that's when I really genuinely don't understand. I want to look into the commentary one more time, just to get that clear. But the four different examples of things that you're not allowed to pay people with seventh year produce monies or seventh year, you know, assets are these four people, because in some way it benefits the body. Now, I'll tell you on the outside, I get a well digger. You're digging a well, you're paying a man to dig a well so that you have water to drink. That's directly affecting your body, right? I get the bathhouse because that is when you are going to bathe and get a just like the sach of the oil, you're covering your body with this oil. In this case, you're cleaning your body of all the oil or cleaning your body of all the dirt. That is a direct body benefit. And Lola Sapar, you shouldn't pay the barber because he's going to cut your hair, and that's a body benefit. My question is, what is the benefit to a boatman or a sailor? So let me just go to the art scroll. So art scroll quotes the Rambam, who says, not the sailor nor any other artisans of any kind. So art scroll, the Yad Avraham commentary says, it's logical to assume that the Mishnah lists the professions mentioned here to make a halachic point. In the instances of a bath keeper and a barber, it could have been thought that these services, which provide for the body's needs and comforts, may be purchased with Shemitah produce, since it could be argued that these are uses that are classified with eating. In the instance of a boatman, the service he offers is absolutely essential because the rivers cannot be forded without boats. Thus, the Mishnah must teach that none of these services may be paid for out of Shemitah funds. So it seems like the benefit that you get is that you don't drown. You know, you cross the river without getting soaked and possibly drowning. I'm not really sure what that implies. So, and the Rambam extends this to all kinds of artisans of all kinds. So to me, an artisan, if that's truly the word he's looking for, I don't have the Hebrew here of the Rambam, but an artisan to me is someone that creates something out of craftsmanship. So I'm not sure still, even with this, do you have anything, any source you're looking at that could help with this? I don't really understand what the difference is between this boatman.
I don't know. They translate that they give different translations for this.
Yeah, what are you reading? What commentary?
To respect, to care. I'm just looking at a comment that is on side of Sfari, and they give different translation for this word.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be other meanings other than sailor.
Okay. Well, short of something definite, I'll move on. But I understand the three. I don't understand the fourth. So anyway.
Yeah, they say it's like same as a regard, care. So it's somebody, it sounds like somebody who takes care of you in a certain way.
Maybe the boatman protects you from drowning is all I can think of, you know.
No, but you can, but anybody... Yeah, so this is like only one of the sailor is only one of the meanings. Like they gave meaning a captain of a freight ship. Maybe it brings you supplies. I don't know. Maybe it brings you food. I don't know.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. Because I don't know. I'm going to take the direct interpretation. The well digger has something that you consume in your body. The valan is something that you get on the outside of your body. The sapar cuts something away from your body, and it sounds like the opposite of cutting away something is bringing something to your body, the way that you're suggesting. Like he's the last link in the supply chain to get it to you as that last mile. Mm-hmm. So he brings you the food. He brings you Maybe that's what they mean.
Back in the days, they used to bring the spices overseas.
So maybe that's it. Maybe you're spot on. Sounds like that's much better than anything here. So we'll call that the Yad Avi, the Yad Avraham, Yad Avi commentary. All right. Okay. So Aval notain hu levayar, but he may give these to, bless you. He may give Aval notain hu levayar. He may give these to a well digger, lishtia, in order for him to drink. But he may give these proceeds to any of these four categories of people as a free gift. So again, it's not for payment. It's making sure that we don't make inappropriate use out of Shemitah produce and proceeds from Shemitah produce as a transaction. Yeah, it's only to give as a free gift because again, you can't receive any remuneration or payment for these. Okay, so we'll leave that one, you know, teku, figure that out later. Okay, so Shvius Perkas Mishnah Vav. Te'enim, figs. Te'enim shel Shvit, figs of Shvit. Ein kotzin otam b'mukse, may not be cut with a fig knife. Now, by the way, you remember back a couple of chapters ago, we had a whole list of things that you're not allowed to use, like implements and kalim that you're not allowed to use. I think that's what this word muksa here really is talking about. There are certain implements that could be used during the normal year and the Shemitah year. And then there are things that are only going to be used for tending the fields, which is something you shouldn't do during Shemitah. And just like Shabbos, we're considering those muksa items. I think that's what the terminology here muksa means. So to Einim, Shel Shviat, when you're talking about figs in the Shemitah year, ein kotzin otam b'muksa, you're not allowed to cut them with some kind of specific tool for that fruit or whatever it is.
I think it's inside the muksa. It's probably keli.
Yeah.
Put them inside and you cut them inside that.
So that's what I'm thinking. I think it's something very specific. Aval kotze otam b'charav, but you may cut them with a sword. So you may look ridiculous cutting this tiny fig with a huge sword. But
Harba, I have a translation as an open place.
Oh really?
Yeah, you can cut them as, like, I guess muksa is some kind of plate, something that has borders, and harba is like an open place.
Okay. Yeah, Art Scroll here translates it as a sword.
Oh yeah.
And that's also, I think, what I got out of Kahati. Let me just see. Yeah. Does he mention?
Knife, yeah. Harba has a meaning of knife, ruin, waste, ruin, dry ground.
From the Rambam, it appears that he translates kotze as dry. Thus, he explains the Mishnah mean one may dry not ground. Dry the figs in a fig drying area. So it sounds like what you're reading is from the Rambam. The figs will be dried in a special area designated and outfitted for this purpose. Aval kotze otam b'churva, b'churba, with a base, is rendered, but he may dry them in a ruin. So it sounds like, you know, some wide open spaces, if you're saying. Okay, so... Again.
So there are different definitions. I guess it can be a knife, or it can be a ruin, or an open space, some kind of dry ground. Yeah.
So ein dorchin anavim begat, nor may one press grapes in a wine press. And I think this is more in line with the idea of the kalim idea, because all these are going to be kalim that we mentioned. There are specific tools designed to process the food as you normally would. We're sort of looking for a shinoi on Shabbos, which Shvius being Shabbos. So we were looking for a shinoi. We wouldn't do them with the ordinary tool, which would be quote unquote mukse. Ein dorchin anavim begat. One may not press grapes in a wine press. Aval dorech hu ba'areva, but he may press them in a kneading trough. The ein osin zeitim bevad uvakot uv kotev, nor may one press olives in an olive press and with a weighted beam. Aval kotesh hu umik umachnis levodida. but you may crush the olives and put them into a small press. So again, I think I just feel like it's the theme that I'm going back on that earlier phrase, feeling like it's with Muksa, but there's that other term, the other terminology used by the Rambam. Rabbi Shimon Omer.
The Muksa I see now. The Muksa is translated. One of the translations is a place for cutting and drying fruit.
Yeah. So that, I guess that's, and does it quote the Rambam there?
So I guess, no, I didn't see.
Okay, because over here they give that explanation. They say this is from the Rambam.
Yeah, so, no, but you said that the Rambam says it's like you said that the Rambam translates Horba or Muksa also.
Kotza is differently translated, and then as a result, Aval Kotza Otam Behurba instead of Beharva. So Beharva being a sword, and Hurba is a ruin. So in some area that is designated as isolated or whatever. So Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, Av tochen hu bevet habad umachnis levodida. And Rabbi Shimon says he may even grind them in the olive press and then put them into a small press to, I guess, process them further. I'm not exactly sure why that's. Art Scroll here says, or the Rav and the Rambam both say, according to the Art Scroll commentary, Rabbi Shimon is not concerned with the mere possibility of eventual destruction. Only the actual destruction of Shemitah produce is prohibited according to him, and the halacha is not in accordance with this view. Rabbi Shimon's view here is an extension of his view regarding sacrifices. So they don't give a source to that. I don't know exactly. No, they do. Zvachim. So going all the way back to Zvachim. In his view, in Rabbi Shimon's view, one may cause the shortening of the time allotted for eating a sacrifice, although this may cause it to be disqualified prematurely. So how does that change? Am I reading from the right Rabbi Shimon? Actually, I'm sorry. I'm reading from the wrong Rabbi Shimon. I'm reading from the Rabbi Shimon in Mishnah 7. Let me back up. Start again. Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says he may even grind them in an olive press and put them in a small press. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, says the Rav. I don't understand how that explains anything, but okay. I was reading the wrong Rabbi Shimon. So there's another Rabbi Shimon coming up in Mishnah Zion. Yeah,
because the Tanakama is more stringent, so he gives you more lenient opinion.
Oh, is that what that is? Okay, good call. Okay, so Mishnah Zion, I'm just checking our time, 8:34. Okay. Mishnah Zion. Ein mivashlin yarak shel shviit b'shemen shel truma. You may not cook a vegetable of Shemitah in oil, which is truma. This I found this very confusing the first time, so I'm going to take this one slow. Shelo yevienu liyidei psul, so that he not cause it to become unfit. And I think he's talking about the truma to become unfit, as I recall. I'm going to come back in a minute. Let's just do the full mission and come back. You're going to say something?
I think it's going on the vegetables.
Vegetables? As explained above in Mishnah 2, if truma should become contaminated with tuma, it becomes forbidden to be eaten and it must be burned. Consequently, one may not cook a vegetable possessing Shemitah sanctity in oil of truma, even a Kohen, who may otherwise eat truma, because the truma may become contaminated by contact with a tuma agent and therefore cause the entire dish, including the Shemitah vegetables, to be burnt. So by being cooked in truma oil, the Shemitah vegetable absorbs some of the oil and thereby becomes subject to the laws of the absorbed substance. So it must be treated with the same stringency as teruma, which necessitates it being burned if it becomes tummy. So I'm not sure really still if we're more concerned about the teruma or the.
So it sounds like the vegetables. It sounds like we would invalidate the vegetables or shvius and we would have to burn them, no?
Yeah, but it sounds like the primary concern is the teruma. That's what it sounds like here. Maybe I'm reading it wrong. One more time. One may not cook a vegetable possessing Shemitah sanctity in oil of teruma because the truma might become contaminated by contact with the tuma agent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is focused on the truma.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So aim of Ashlin Yarak Shel Shviat Bishemen Shel Truma. You may not cook a vegetable of the seventh year in oil, which is truma, shelo yavienu liyidei pasul, so that he not cause the truma to become unfit, it to become unfit. Rabbi Shimon Matir, and here Rabbi Shimon permits this. This is what I was incorrectly reading earlier. Rabbi Shimon is not concerned with a mere possibility of eventual destruction. Only the actual destruction of Shemitah produce is prohibited according to him. Rabbi Shimon's view here is an extension of his view regarding sacrifices. In his view, one may cause the shortening of the allotted time for eating a sacrifice, although this may cause it to be disqualified prematurely. Okay. The achron nitpas bashvit, and the very last object of exchange is subject to the seventh year sanctity. The hapri atzmo asur, but the produce itself remains prohibited. So just a quick reading of the Art Scroll commentary here. When Shemitah produce has been exchanged for another item, and that item in turn is exchanged for something else and so forth, the only exchange item to retain sanctity is the very last one. Okay, right. So like when you have Maaser Sheni and you exchange the fruit for the money, you carry the money, that money has the Kedusha. And then you go up to Yerushalayim and you spend that money on the fruit and the drink and the whatever you want to spend it on. Now that fruit and drink has the Kedusha. So it's only one thing, the most recent thing that you've exchanged has the Kedusha, okay? And then he says, Achron achron nitpas b'shvit. So the very last object of exchange is subject to the seventh year sanctity. The hapri atzmo asur, but the fruit itself is prohibited, meaning the original Shemitah produce itself cannot be freed of its Shemitah sanctity through redemption. Instead, the actual seventh year produce retains its Shemitah status while imparting that status to any object given in exchange for it. For example, in the case given above, when the meat was bartered for Shemitah fruit, it assumed Shemitah sanctity without in any way diminishing the sanctity of the fruit. It is only from the second exchange forward that the Shemitah sanctity is transferred from one item to the other. Thus, in this second exchange, the sanctity is removed from the meat and transferred to the fish. In the third exchange, the sanctity is transferred from the fish to the oil. At this stage, only the oil, which is the very last object of exchange, and the original fruit have sanctity. So really two things have sanctity. It transfers it sort of like
the original and the last one.
The original and the last one. Yeah. Yeah, that's the point here. So that's why it says hapri atzmo asur. The fruit itself becomes forbidden. Okay, Mishnah, what time we got here? 8:40. Okay, we may finish in time. Perkas Mishnah Ches. Ein lokhin avadin. It's we may not purchase slaves, the kaot or land, uvehema tamea and non-kosher animals, midame shvit, with the seventh year money. The imlakach, but if he did actually purchase, yochal kenegdam, he must eat produce of equal value to that. Ein mevin kine zavim, one may not bring a pair of the birds for a zav, the kine zavot, and the pair of birds for a zava, a woman, the kine, or the birds, yoldot, for a woman who's given birth, midame shvit, from any monies of shvit, that have that shvit sanctity. The imhevi, and if he did, as he did in the previous case, if he did actually do that, and he's mistaken, yochal kenegdam, then he must, again, eat produce of equal value to whatever he gave. Ein sachin kalim b'shemen shel shvit, and one may not smear utensils with the oil of the seventh year. Be'im sach, but if he did inappropriately smear, yachol kenegdo, then again he must eat the equal produce value of whatever he gave, whatever he used to that for that inappropriate act. Okay. Mishnah Tess, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Od shesacho b'shemen shel shvit, or shesacho b'shemen shel shvit. So this is a leather hide, which was smeared with oil. Rabbi Eliezer Omer yidalek. Rabbi Eliezer says then that hide should be burned because that is inappropriate. It didn't go to benefit a human or an animal or anything live. It was used as like a treatment, you know, as a chemical in a process, and that was inappropriate. So the whole skin really should be burned and not be used. You shouldn't get any benefit from it. But the Chachamim said, Yochal Kenegdo. Then he goes back to the case previously we saw in the Mishnah where he eats the equivalent value of the oil that was used inappropriately to treat the hides, and then he gets off the hook. Amru lifnei Rabbi Akiva, and they said before Rabbi Akiva, Omer haya Rabbi Eliezer or shesacho b'shemen shel shvit yidalek. They said they reported this case and this ruling to Rabbi Akiva. Shtoku. This is odd. Rabbi Akiva replies, "Be silent. I don't, you know, don't speak up. Lo amar lachem ma sherabbi Eliezer amar bo. I will not tell you what Rabbi Eliezer parenthetically actually said regarding this. And the reason is because Rabbi Eliezer was so much more lenient than what is actually reported in the Mishnah. So it seems like the Mishnah was not that it wasn't recorded faithfully. It was almost recorded as like a not censorship, but as a way to minimize how radical Rabbi Eliezer's opinion was on this, that when they asked Rabbi Akiva, he would say, you know, don't talk about this because his opinion is much worse than it actually, what he actually said. So I forgot where they said this. I didn't see this in the art scroll, so I just got to find it for a second. Yeah, okay, here it is. All right, so here he says, it's continued in the next one. That's why. So it's, let's go to Yud, mm-hmm. and we'll see his full opinion. Va'od Amru Lefanav. Additionally, they said before Rabbi Akiva, Omer Haya Rabbi Eliezer Ha'ochel Pat Kutim Ka'ochel Basar V'Chazir. Anyone who eats the bread of the Kutis is comparable to a person who eats pig meat. And if you're familiar with the history of it, this is obviously during the period when the Kutis were suspect, but it wasn't really proven that they were still davening to an Avodah Zarah, even after they had converted to Judaism. They converted half-heartedly on the basis of the lion attacks during the times of David HaMelech. They were annexed by David HaMelech, and they felt that, you know, better to serve Hashem and to worship Hashem and have the lion stop, at least in public, than to continue getting attacked by lions. But only later was it discovered that, I think on Mount Gerizim, they actually had an Avodah Zarah, and they had archaeological digs that showed that they had idols set up to some Avodah Zarah that they continued to worship while they were supposedly converting to Judaism publicly. So it's as if they had this suspicion going at the time, and Rabbi Akiva says, well, it's as if they have eaten the pig meat. If you eat the bread of the Kutis, it's as if you've eaten pig meat because they're totally unreliable and whatnot. So he says,
this is Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is saying this.
No, They said
in front of Rabbi Akiva in the name of Rabbi Eliezer.
Yes, Rabbi Akiva is telling the story in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. Yeah, that anyone who eats the bread of the Kutis, the Kutim, is as if he's eaten pig meat because they were suspect at that time. Lo amaru lachem ma sherabbi Eliezer amar bo. Omer Bo. I will not tell you what Rabbi Eliezer said regarding this. Okay, so this is where we find out what the full weight of Rabbi Eliezer's judgments were. They say on Ke'ochel Basar V'Chazir, it's comparable to one who eats pig meat. The Art Scroll commentary says, of course, this is not to be taken literally. Eating pig meat is biblically prohibited and punishable by lashes, whereas the bread of the Kutim is only rabbinic prohibition. Rabbi Eliezer uses this description to emphasize the seriousness of eating such bread. And then lower in the commentary on Amar Lahem Shtoku, be quiet, says Rabbi Akiva. They say, in reality, Rabbi Eliezer was not as stringent as this. Maybe it goes the other way. On the contrary, he was rather lenient in regard to the Kutim. The Rishalmi records the view of one Amora that Rabbi Eliezer even permitted the purchase of chametz from Kutim immediately after Pesach, and was not concerned that the Kutim were lax in regard to the laws of chametz.
Maybe that was it. Maybe he held that they are not really Jewish.
Yeah, maybe, right. That's what it sounds like. He was talking about the purchase of chametz. It's sounding as if he dismissed that their conversion completely. Yeah. But apparently, I was listening to Rabbi Yisrael Bank here, who was giving this over, and he went through a good deal of the history of it, and he was saying that the suspicions at the time were out there, but it wasn't really confirmed until years later. So it went through three stages. It went through the Kutim were totally goyim. Then the second stage, when they quasi converted and were regarded with some suspicion because things were going on that couldn't be proved. And then after a certain point, it was actually confirmed, and they were, it was almost like their gerus was rescinded and they were treated again as goyim. At a certain point, and it sounds like Rabbi Akiva lived during the period of time when the suspicion was still there, and he was reporting on the time of Rabbi Akiva is in the time when it was confirmed, and Rabbi Eliezer was living in the time when the suspicion was still there, but it wasn't proven. It was an interesting historical discussion anyway. Okay, last Mishnah, and we're at 48 minutes. Okay, great. Last Mishnah, Yod Aleph. Huska, if a bath, merchatz shehuska b'tevin. Now, a bathhouse that was heated with straw, that's stubble. B'tevin is stubble and b'kash is straw. Merchatz shehuska b'tevin o b'kash. A bathhouse that was heated with stubble or straw, shel shvi'it, Mutter lirchotz ba. It is permissible to bathe in that particular bathhouse.
You're right. First, betamen is the straw, and bakash is the stubble.
Is it? Okay. I got it backwards here. At least in the Art Scroll translation, they have it backwards. They have stubble as betamen. Okay, one way or the other. I know they're not quite interchangeable, but they're similar. Mutter lirchotz ba. So it would be permissible to bathe in such a bathhouse, and you won't have to suspect them of misappropriating the shvius and the holiness of it. The im mit chashev hu, but if he is a respectable person, hareze lo yirchotz, he should not bathe in it. And why? Because it's almost like the notoriety of that person. I think they say this actually in the commentary. I saw this at least in Kahati. The notoriety of the person serves as payment itself. So today, if we have like restaurants, fancy restaurants in New York, and you know, when fancy people go there, there's pictures on the wall of who ate there, right? That's like an endorsement and an advertisement that they can benefit from, that people want to continue going there because they'll feel they'll be hobnobbing with important people or famous people. So similarly here, the im mit chashev, who, if he is an important person himself, this particular person should not go and be there, because it's as if he's paying the person, not in money, but in notoriety, and that other people will come and he'll benefit subsequently and secondarily from people that follow.
It sounds like Midas Chasidus.
Yeah, right. It's just the extra step. So that is Perikhes. Again, I apologize.
Okay, yeah, Shakoyach. No, it's fine. Yeah, Shakoyach.
All right, we'll try to meet up again. What time is good for you again?
So
stop this recording.
So,